If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Welcome to the latest edition of Quest for Gold. We are 126 days away from the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. I'm Ryan Brown. I'm back in the United States following our tour of South Korea last week. This week, we learned Snoop Dogg will be back in the NBC Olympic broadcast booth following his Olympic debut in Paris in 2024. He'll be back with Snoop's Greatest Hits, and of course, he'll be exploring Milan for the broadcast. And it's important to note that he's the host of The Voice, which will be airing a new season on NBC. It's pretty safe to assume Snoop will be on the broadcast when the Olympics return to his home city of Los Angeles in 2028. Olympic organizers reportedly have to pick up the pace on finishing the athletes' Olympic Village. The new housing units were constructed on a redeveloped old rail yard on the outskirts of Milan. Organizers this week took charge of the site and now must get them prepped and ready for about 1,700 athletes with just a few months to go. A source with knowledge told the AFP crews need to move quickly to make sure everything's ready by February 6th. The medals have been revealed for the upcoming Olympic and Paralympic Games. They feature a unique design that combines two halves, symbolizing the culmination of the athlete's journey and all those who have walked beside them along the way. Pretty cool concept. Canadian hockey legend Sidney Crosby's hoping he's still got a shot to make his home country's hockey team as the NHL players return to the Winter Olympics for the first time in 12 years. We're still a little ways away from knowing the rosters of the teams, but Crosby has expressed interest in wearing Canadian red in Milan come February. This week, we talk with a two-time U.S. Winter Olympian. He's defied logic by competing as a ski jumper at a very high international level for a decade, despite being from Barrington, Illinois, one of the flattest parts of the country, if not the world.
All right, so you broke some news last week. What's going on in your world right now?
Yeah, been around the sport a long time, and just over the last couple of years, obviously, you know, decided to retire. I think it was a long time coming in the sense of battled with loving the sport on one end and really struggling to compete and struggling to enjoy the competition process for a long time as well. And I just realized I can love the sport in a million different ways and I don't have to kind of not have fun anymore. I can find a way to get back and do what I want to do. And heck, you know, can still toss the skis on once in a while if that's what it takes for me to, but definitely the healthy decision and just obviously a weird time to do it with the Olympics coming up. And, you know, I think if I would have continued to work my butt off, I could have been in the conversation for that team. But I just, I didn't feel like I wanted it as much as I needed to really make that happen. So I think some of the answers were on the wall for me and decided to hang them up.
It's got to be hard though, right? You've been doing this since you were three. It's kind of your identity, or maybe you kind of attached it to yourself. I mean, not to say that it's not a part of your identity forever, but it's got to be a hard decision.
I mean, I'm proud to say that ski jumping was, you know, 99% of my identity for a super long time. It's the coolest sport in the world. It's given me the opportunity to travel the world and you know, become the person I am today. So I have, you know, I am proud to say that I'm a ski jumper and hopefully will always be a ski jumper and an Olympian and one of those people that drove the sport forward in our country. And I don't plan on ending that trajectory, but for sure my time competing is, it is sad to say, but it's over.
Mentally, kind of like how taxing is the sport? I mean, I'm sure it's taxing on your body as well, right?
You know what? It's taxing, probably mentally more than physically in a lot of ways. You know, we like to brag that we're the second safest Olympic winter sport behind curling, you know, out there in terms of, you know, catastrophic injuries or something like that. But so we do like to consider ourselves a safe sport. But mentally, when you're living out in Europe and traveling all the time, it can be tough. And I won't say it's like the hardest thing in the world. I think, you know, to make it happen for a long time, you understand how cool it actually is. And people would kill that be in my position living in Norway and like just having a blast. That's really what my life was for a long time. Yeah. Was just hanging out in a, you know, a different type of frat house basically with sure. Me and my couple teammates and but it was some of the best times of my entire life. And but yeah, it can be hard just competing every weekend and maybe not doing as well as you wanted to or not reaching your goals, I would say, but that's similar in probably a lot of walks of life. It can be taxing in that way.
Are you on the older end of the spectrum when it comes to ski jumping? I'm not quite sure kind of what the median age is.
No, absolutely not. The it's like we compare ski jumping so much to golf and the longevity you see in golf in a lot of ways. Where, yeah, granted, we don't have any, Phil Mickelsons out there.
Sure.
But we do have some people in their, early 40s that are still competing at a high level because it is such a technique-based sport where if you kind of got that swing, you can ski for a long time. So you'll see athletes kind of hit their peak post-puberty, like when they stop growing. And then they can maintain that for a very, very long time.
Sure, sure. All right. Yeah, two Olympic experiences. Why don't you give me a couple flashpoints of each of those? What sticks with you about South Korea? What sticks with you about Beijing?
I would say both Beijing and South Korea was how special it was and how special I understood that it was that I was going to the Olympics with two other teammates from the Chicagoland area and kids that I grew up with. In 2018, obviously we have Mike Glasder, who's a coach now at the Nordic Ski Club. We got Kevin Bickner, and then you got myself. So that was just of in itself, these two other guys that I'd looked up to my entire life in terms of competing. Mike was a little bit older. Kevin was similar to my age. But just going to the Olympics with that team was so special. And then in 2022, we swapped Mike for Patrick Oshinitsa, who I also grew up with, and just had an absolute blast competing with my best friends that I grew up with at the Olympics. That was insane. I hope it happens again. We have athletes from the Norgi Ski Club that are still favorites to go to the Olympics this year, which we can talk about. But that was definitely the two high points in those Olympics.
Was the competition itself something that you remember, or is it more kind of the atmosphere? And I don't know if you did opening ceremony, closing ceremony, trading pins, kind of what was that life like?
Yeah, the community takes precedent over the competition. I think when you were at the level that I was and the expectations I had for the Olympics, you can obviously have some very lofty goals, but in reality, my goals were not to get a medal. That was kind of not in the cards for me at that point. So for sure, what took more precedent was just enjoying the experience and having my best jumps, which I did. And I remember jumping pretty well, but not coming home with any hardware. But you meet so many cool people. We travel all the time with the same athletes, whether you're from Japan or Germany. You see the same faces, but going to an Olympic Games is so cool because we're tiny people. Ski jumpers are not big. So, going and eating lunch next to a bobsledder is always pretty funny. And those are always the best times, and meeting those guys, and they respect you for what you do and you respect them for what they do. And it's always cool.
We've had conversations before and we've talked about this briefly, but kind of as you sunset your career, how your family is very tied into the ski club, obviously, in Illinois, which we'll get into, how this is possible in like the flattest part of the country that you become a ski jumper and it continues to churn out Olympians. But where is the sport right now in America and how can it expand? It's always going to be hard to compete with football and baseball. And I mean, that's just reality, but it's about bringing young people to the sport, right? And do you see room for growth there?
Yeah, there's always room for growth. I think the sport of ski jumping in the country right now is the highest. We're at the highest level we've ever been at, 100%. I mean, I retired having some of my best jumps of my entire life that can go do extremely well in World Cup, which, even 4 years prior was not the norm, but in theory, you've got all these kids that are starting to absolutely whoop up on the older guys, which is super cool to see. You've got some athletes like Jason Colby, Tate Franz, Eric Belshaw, who are kind of on the horizon of being top 30 in the world. And you've got, kind of representing my era, Kevin Bickner. He was, I believe, top 40 in the overall last year, which was his best season of all time. And he's, getting into his upper 20s, and he's the oldest guy on the team, which, relatively, we're an extremely young team at the United States, so a lot of those guys are going to be around for quite a while and hopefully representing the country for a couple more games and a couple more World Cup seasons. So on that end, it's extremely exciting. Like, we've got the best national team we've ever had. we've had this partnership with Norway for the last 4 years where we live over there. We have their, we, you know, utilize their coaches and their resources. And we've seen, you know, an extremely steep uptick in terms of the skill level at that level. So on that end, we're extremely excited. But on the other end, in terms of development and recruitment, that's always a struggle in the United States with ski jumping. We're a niche sport. We're not going to, you know, be, you know, in comparison to baseball or football. And we don't necessarily want that or need that to be successful. But we do just want to get the word out there that it's a blast. You don't have need to have any like ski skills. It's a totally different thing. And what's cool is we got like a hub like Chicago with tons of kids that just want to goof around and have fun. And the Norgi Ski Club, for example, is a great place to do that. And I live out in Park City, Utah now, and or like the Salt Lake area. And, you know, our club doesn't have a ton of kids right now out here, but that's my claim. I'm like, you're in Salt Lake City and you're bored and you want to have fun. It's, you know, not that expensive to get into, you know, and especially when you compare it to some of the other skiing sports that, that people like to do out here, like the alpine skiing and the ski racing and cross country skiing, you know, we're not on that echelon of, you know, where you got to pay, you know, you got to buy 5 pairs of skis for a kid who's 12 years old. Ski jumping doesn't necessarily have that barriers to entry, which is cool. And that's my biggest selling point to parents and stuff like that. But just bring your kids out. It's a blast. It's fun to watch. The kids always seem to enjoy it. You catch this like little addictive bug really quickly because you're actively flying through the air. And you've got a great club. And all the coaches are super excited to, you know, they're all volunteers and they're there because they love the sport. So I just promote the fun aspect of it and get out there and enjoy it.
And if there's one thing I've learned from being in the Northwest suburbs too, is you don't actually need snow.
No, we got plastic.
You got plastic, you got hay, you got everything. Yeah, no, there's plenty there to do. But I think, you know, winter sports are obviously a little bit different than the summer sports. And yeah, this is the Olympics is the first time that a lot of people see that sport. And I think maybe an interesting perspective from you is, when you go to these European countries, it is the Super Bowl there, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. We have a World Cup season every single year. It's not like every time you guys turn on the TV for the Olympic Games, that's not it for us. We're competing and we're dedicating our lives 365 days a year over those 4 years, those 8 years, those 16 years that we're in the sport. So it's a, and then in Europe, it is the most popular winter sport, or it's the second most popular winter sport in terms of average viewership. So it's right behind, I believe it's right behind biathlon. Biathlon's really popular. But yeah, I mean, I get to jump in front of 50,000 people sometimes. That's not every competition, but it's most. It's most. And it's rad. That's what puts a smile on your face as an athlete. And those are the memories I remember, and the competitions I remember is just, I remember the first time after COVID when we finally got to jump in front of fans again, that season coming out and just knowing like, oh, we're going to have some, like the Four Hills tournament in Germany and Austria every year. Like, you're so excited for that competition because you just knew it was going to be insane. And it was. Everybody showed up and showed out and it was a blast. But yeah, I would say it's a pretty popular sport over there, which is random and weird and niche, but yeah, we fill out stadiums.
You kind of came up into this, you know, with Team USA at an interesting time. We obviously, you know, we've been talking a lot about mental health. You know, there have been efforts to really try to get the athletes paid better. We went through the pandemic during that time. Is where the sport is now and where Team USA is, just in generally speaking, in a better place than it was when you first started? I mean, do you feel like more resources are being dedicated to athletes? Do you feel like the training is better? Do you feel or do you feel like there are still some things that need to be done?
Yeah, there's stuff that needs to be done. I think I can appreciate what USOPC and the US Olympic Committee and the U.S. ski team and especially USA Ski Jumping as an organization has done for me as an athlete. They work every day to make sure we have what we need to go compete at the World Cup level. And but 100%, we are. I think it's not unknown that American athletes aren't funded by the government or any government entity in any way. So that differs a lot from even our Canadian friends up north. There's a carding system where the government will support them. and pretty much to allow that to be their, I mean, it's not a high paying job, but I'm aware of some Canadian athletes that make enough without prize money to live in Europe and train full time and do what they need to do. Where as a ski jumper, I mean, I had a part-time job my entire career.
Is that the difference between the US and some of these other countries when it comes to this sport?
I don't want to say yes, because there's ways we can make it happen, and there's my teammates are succeeding at the World Cup level and like doing good, and they're all of their money that all their income is based on sponsors, prize money. So nothing's coming from the government. But also the government isn't, you know, taking away any of the prize money in that sense, other than just your average taxes. Whereas for some countries, I know that's different, where you may be getting a lot of support, but then there's always some weird deals going on. You're not sure on how every country works exactly, but it's just the simple fact that I wish I could have made ski jumping my 100% job for my entire career. Maybe that would that have changed some things. I don't know. I was happy to, you know, do what I had to do and make it work. I love the sport, and I wouldn't have traded my upbringing or my teammates or my coaches for anything. So in that sense, I loved representing the United States. I love representing Oregon Ski Club and USA Ski Jumping. That was kind of what I always tried to focus on, because no, our opportunities were not the same as the Kazakhstan team or the Canadian team or the German team. It was always very different. And that's just the fact. Sure. Granted, but that does allow athletes that are at a really, really high level to make a lot more money when it comes to, like, you know, the Lindsey Vonn, the Michaela Schifrins, Jesse Diggins. They're all doing an incredible job. And they're able to excel under the circumstances. But that's definitely not the norm for every run of the mill athlete. And I think that was a political answer enough, but yeah. It is what I truly believe, in the sense of, I don't think a lot of my teammates would want to, like, you know, go compete for a different team. I don't think that's the case, but I do think there's always work to be done to make sure that every athlete, if they're on the World Cup level, if they're on the international level, to get them more support somehow, whether that's find sponsors that really want to, you know, support the grassroots, or not even the grassroots, but just that itch below, you know, that modern media, or that you know, that mainstream athlete that we always see when it comes to the Winter Olympics. There's athletes that are fifth place that we don't remember, all the way down to, you know, 30th place at the Olympics, that we just aren't gonna be able to support fully.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's an interesting dynamic. We do things a certain way in the United States, although I see, based on the conversation I'm having, there is more focus of trying to get that support, and trying to get mental health has been a big part that I've heard in recent years. They found that to be obviously a strength, just like a muscle. All right. Well, what's next for you? What are you thinking about doing next? Kind of how are you planning out the rest of, are you just trying to get through the day at this point, or are you, do you have long-term plans?
Yeah. I told myself, oh, I'll figure it out on Monday. And Monday was a couple of days ago. So I'll start chugging along. Probably, you know, my dad will listen to this. So I'm going to go back to school. We're going to get, you know,
sure.
There's a lot of ideas on the table, but, you know, I still love the sport of ski jumping. I definitely want to, and I love living out in Park City, Utah. It's a blast. I've, you know, ended up really enjoying the mountains. So I'm hopefully going to basically want to just coach at this club for a little bit and plug along and maybe ski bum it for a year. But yeah, definitely halfway through a degree, 26 years old, so I should probably get on that.
What's the degree for?
I don't know. I was just going to the University of Utah, but I'm like halfway through a business administration degree.
Business administration. There you go. You
got to get something. Got to get something. But we'll see. I'm in this headspace right now that just work my tailbone off in another aspect, and it'll work out. It'll work out for sure.
You don't have to have everything figured out right now, Trey. Are you? It takes your life continues regardless of whether you think you have everything figured out or not. Are you going to be watching Milan Cortina? Obviously, your former teammates, and you,
oh, of course. Are you just going to try
to
disassociate? I definitely won't disassociate. I'm leaving the sport on in extremely good terms, and love all my teammates. I do like coaching. I think I'm selling myself short in the sense of I care about the development of the sport in this country. I have plans to you know, try and do what I can to help recruiting across the country. And I think, you know, talking to people like you, I mean, it's all part of that process. So that's definitely a focus for me, and doing what I can to make sure that we get kids ski jumping and enjoying the sport that really shaped my life. So that being said, I will definitely be watching Milan Cortina, and those are my favorite people in the world that'll be out there competing for the United States. So I'll for sure be rooting them on.
Well, and there's another Olympics coming into your backyard if you stay in Utah, right?
Exactly. That's half the plan, is just making sure I can watch the Olympics come to my second home here and see what we can make of it. Because
maybe you can be an advisor. I'm sure they need some help, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll go get
picking out the venue and checking it out. And
well, so yeah, that's the cool thing, is, and that's why the Olympics wanted to come back to Salt Lake, is we don't have to do a ton, in the sense of the ski jumps. Yeah, they'll be modernized a little bit here and there, but we got a good set of hills and some few things need to happen. But that goes for almost every venue. So when you hear this bad press of, you know, Sochi in 2014 spending, you know, $40 billion to host the Olympic Games, that's not going to be the case for Salt Lake City. You know, that price is coming way down, just because we do get to reuse so much of what was used back in 2002. Because, you know, obviously that infrastructure is still there. Some things need to be modernized for 2034, you know, it's only, you know, 32 years later, but it's going to be pretty, hopefully, smooth sailing, and the community here wants it back. And I think it's going to be a pretty good time.
So what should we be looking for in Milan Cortina? Who are the big names in the U.S.? Who are the big names internationally? Who should we get to know?
Kevin Bickner, my best friend, sure, growing up. And he just had his best season of the year last season, which was legit. I mean, he was getting top 15s in the World Cup. And, you know, that was just him coming off a year of retirement. Like, he just was, it seemed like, just from the outside looking in, or just like being his roommate, he just was kind of ramping things back up. And then I know for a fact that he's been working his tail off all summer long. And then we've got nationals on October 11th and 12th. So we'll kind of see how that shapes up out there. But then Tate Franz from Lake Placid, New York, he's extremely competitive. Second place at Junior Worlds last year and some top 10s on the World Cup last year. So he's going to be one of the favorites going in. And then we're probably going to get three Olympic spots for this year. So third and fourth spots are going to be up for grabs. That third spot has like three people vying for it. So I'm really curious to see what gets tossed down and who kind of steps up to the plate. And then on the female side, you've got Sandra Sprock. She grew up competing at the jumping for the Norgi Ski Club. She's a hometown girl and she's my dark horse. She's her first year on the national team, but she's extremely driven and extremely motivated. And her dad is a coach out in Norgi. So she comes from good ski jumping blood and she knows what's up. So, that would be my two, that's kind of my take. But then other than that, I guess I got a plug. Norgi Ski Club has their fall tournament October 4th and 5th.
Okay.
Gates open at 10:30. You can buy buttons online or at a lot of like local merchants in the Northwest suburbs. I know Barrington, McHenry, Cary, they've all got a bunch of places with, that are selling buttons. And then, or you can buy them at the gate for like $25. But yeah, that's October 4th and 5th. And you get to see Sandra, you get to see some of these athletes competing that are our future in the United States. So
that's fantastic.
Cool.
And I've been there. I've witnessed it. The at least the one in the winter. I haven't been to the one in the fall, but it's an awesome experience. Absolutely yeah. Awesome.
The one in the fall, a little less busy, better beer drinking weather. That's why
better
I would
beer
say.
Drinking, it's a little warmer.
yeah, for sure.
No, it's good stuff. And by the way, if you're Casey, if you're, you know, like, what am I going to do? I don't know if you're a big Seinfeld fan, but you know, George Costanza is having this moment with Jerry, and they're thinking about things he could do in his career, and he says, maybe I can, I like baseball, maybe I could be a baseball broadcaster. I'm thinking that you need to reach out to NBC and say, hey, look, I am a wealth of ski jumping knowledge, maybe you send me to Milan Cortina and I can be on the broadcast. What do you think?
Yeah, this will be my first initial I'm looking into it, let's just say that.
All right
I haven't yet, but
no,
I know
you, we got to get
Johnny
you Spillane.
Johnny Spillane's definitely the one of the better talking heads we've ever had on NBC talking about ski jumping. And he's the one who, he comes from 2010 Olympic fame in Nordic combined. But I would love to be up there with him. I mean, I love yapping, so
yeah,
maybe I'm not the best at it, but
I love it.
Well, you know what? All you got to do is speak what you know. You don't have to. You don't have to be anyone but yourself out there, and then people will appreciate that. You know. So mm-hmm. I seriously, I would see if there's anyone you know who can connect to you, because I think with all these streaming channels and plus channels, and there's probably just going to be a ski jump only channel through Comcast. You know, I'm sure that they're looking for someone who's got some knowledge.
Well, yeah, and then if WGN needs anything when our some Chicagoans go to the O show, I'd love to give my two cents.
But I think that we should definitely get a ski jump show on WGN radio. I think that would
be. I mean, it's what I feel like it's what we're setting up a culture. Sure. That's what we're about. Ski jumping in Chicago.
Hey,
it's pretty
sick. I'll tell you what, if you bring the sponsorship, I'll tell sales they can probably make it happen.
I'll talk to Wild Onion
and Norgi and you bring the money, it'll come. Anything can happen if you bring the money. So thank you so much, Casey. I really appreciate
it. It was nice talking to you, Ryan.
Thank you so much, Casey Larson. He's got a bright future ahead of him, and hopefully we can reconnect down the road. Well, it reached 90 degrees in Chicago this week, but we've got our minds set on snow and ice. Winter Olympics in Milan-Cortina are just 4 months away. It'll be here before you know it. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you here next week for more Olympic news and interviews on Quest for Gold.